Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by Gold Boys. Coming up on the show, Nick Larson of Gold Boys will join us. We will discuss some baseball as we are a month or so into the season, his thoughts on awards, futures, some big picture stuff. We'll get his thoughts on the NBA playoffs. And the playoffs is where we will start recording this Tuesday night. Cavs, Celtics, OKC, and Dallas are both playing their game one. We'll have plenty of time to talk about those series. But we'll talk about the one game on Wednesday and what happened on Monday night, because I guess we'll start with this. And that is, I opened the show Monday by saying, I know it's only one game, but I'm very concerned with my Denver to winning all pick, Denver in seven. My best bet was Minnesota plus 1.5. And I felt good about that. But there was real concern with me with Minnesota after game one, just in terms of the matchup for Denver. And that concern has been verified. Denver is going to be done here. That series is over. I know they have Jokic. I know it's only 2-0. It's happened before, but there does not look like a real path for Denver to get back in the series. And for whatever reason, they don't play Wednesday or Thursday. They play game two on Monday. Then they have to wait till Friday to play game three. So, hey, look, you always have to put the caveat in that, hey, it's Jokic, anything can happen. I understand all that, but I think there is a much better chance Minnesota sweeps Denver than Denver actually gets back in here and wins 4 out of 5 and wins the series and goes to a conference final. It's just that's about as convincing a game two performance you can have for Minnesota. And you talked about it Monday, where these teams lose game one at home as the higher seed, they almost always come out and absolutely dominate in game two, more motivated. The team that has their road win says, all right, we got our split. We'll happily take that on the road. Minnesota said, no. We're going to go for the kill here. And they got the kill. This is without Gobert. They're just so long. So I thought it looks like they're playing 6 or 7 guys on defense. And now it has to enter your mind where the idea of the Minnesota Timberwolves as world champions is a very real possibility. Edwards is a great player. They're long. They're athletic. I mean, they're just a really good, really loaded team here. And Denver does not look like they have any answer. Denver just looks old. They look slow. They look tired. Oh, maybe not old, but Murray's hobbled. They look tired. They went to the middle of June last year to win a championship. And there's a reason these teams, outside the Warriors when they just had dynasties, there's a reason these teams don't generally go back-to-back. There's a reason these teams that win championships have a hard time getting to the conference finals the next year and getting back to the finals next year. It's hard. And people make fun of the Lakers for losing to Denver, being having leads, but losing close games. I think Denver took a little, LA took a little out of Denver, having all those double-digit leads, making Denver work for it. It was a tough 5-game series, and Murray just looks completely wore down. And by the way, what he did the other night to throw a heat pack on the court in the middle of action and not get ejected is just completely ridiculous. And we'll get to more of these officials here with Knicks Pacers, because that was just an abomination in game one, too. But this looks like Minnesota. Now, it's interesting. If you're Denver, would you sign for a split in Minnesota right now? Say, hey, you know what? Probably not going to get both of these. If you could sign right now for a split and give a chance to get back in Denver, I know you'd be down 3-1 and you'd have to win 3 in a row, but hey, I can get my sea legs about me. I'm down 3-1. Just win game 5 and then basically have it come down to game 6 where I can even the series and I'm home for game 7. Would you do that if you're Denver? I don't know. I might be tempted to, but even that doesn't sound like a scenario where, hey, Denver's really going to beat them 3 in a row here, even though 2 of the 3 wouldn't be in Denver. But that's where you're at, Denver. You're on absolute life support here. Denver is going to get knocked out. I think they're getting swept. I really do. I think Minnesota wins Friday. I think they win convincingly, and I think they're getting swept. So Minnesota laying 4.5 on Friday. We'll talk more about that game on the Friday pod, but this looks like Minnesota. And look, I wouldn't count out either Dallas or OKC, but Minnesota looks like they are clearly the best team, at least in the West. And who knows, maybe a Minnesota-Boston final after we all thought it was going to be Denver-Boston. Maybe we're looking at a Kevin Garnett reunion bowl here with Minnesota against Boston. Minnesota just looks unbelievable. 6-0 in the playoffs, killing everybody against the spread. This is a team, I think they were 70-80-1 to win it all. And here they are with a very, very realistic chance to do that as just an absolute dominating performance against Denver. Now, people knocking Jokic saying, hey, he's not doing this, not doing that. I mean, give me a break. Of all the people to knock, I mean, people just have a hard time for whatever reason. He's going to win his third MVP in 4 years here on the next day or two. But people knocking Jokic, I mean, find somebody else to criticize. Give me a break. Minnesota, by the way, now plus 320 to win it all. I mean, I could certainly say, hey, this is to me the best team, and at plus 320, I'll take it. I get it. You would have gotten burned with that logic with Denver at 4-1, 5-1, because it looks like Denver's going to be out here. So again, once you get to this time of year, Most of these lines are basically just go series by series, game by game. He's gonna have to win two series, probably underdogs to Boston. So that's properly priced. But again, if you want to just bank the +320 with what you think is the best team, I could understand that. They wouldn't have home court if it's Minnesota OKC. So keep that in mind. And that'd be a strange conference finals, whether it's Minnesota Dallas, Minnesota OKC. Just definitely some new blood, which I think is good for the league. And I think it's good for the league that it's not always chalk. Like the idea that Minnesota was 70, 80 to 1, and you can get them in an NBA Finals. That's good. I mean, I remember for years it was, you go into the season on Halloween, you knew the two or three teams that were going to win it all. And that's just how the NBA was. It's always been a chalk league. And there's something good about that too, where, hey, you don't just get some fluke champion, but it is good to get some new blood, some long shots, some unpredictability. And this is no fluke here. This Minnesota team is really good. The other game on Monday and the one game on Wednesday, Knicks Pacers. Pacers getting five. I'll take the Pacers +5. I love the Knicks going into the series, late -1.5 games. I thought they'd win this in five, maybe six. I'm still kind of there, but that game one was an impressive showing for Indiana. So you could take that one of two ways. Hey, they played impressively and they're still down 0-1. That's a bad sign. Or you could say, hey, they played well. This is anybody's series. These teams are not that far apart. And these teams probably are not that far apart. The reason I like the Knicks, I just thought there was a toughness element, a physicality with the Knicks that the Pacers couldn't match. Pacers maybe a little soft, and the Knicks would bully them, would punish them on the glass and win a short series. Now, I still think the Knicks are going to win. Oh, Knicks in six. I'm not too far off that. But the way they won, the way that game was officiated, the way that game ended on Monday was, and I know Knicks fans don't want to hear this. They've waited 25 years to have a good team. They don't want to hear about the refs. That was ridiculous. To call a moving screen in that spot, completely ridiculous. They call a kick ball, which wasn't a kick ball. I mean, it got hit off the hand. It wasn't even closed. And with all these reviews, you can't even fix that. So we have endless review upon endless review, and they get have a most the most egregious call you could possibly have, a kick ball that was never kicked. It went off somebody's hand. It leads to a three. Oh, sorry, can't review it. Not possible. I mean, what are we doing? Let's just get rid of the reviews. If you can't fix the bad calls, just get rid of the reviews. It's completely ridiculous. And to call that moving screen there was just, it left a bad taste in everybody's mouth. And I was rooting for the Knicks. I was happy they won, but give me a break. And I love these Nova guys for the Knicks, but they all flop. I mean, Brunson's constantly looking for fouls. Great story. Really good player. Constantly. He's not even playing basketball. He's just out there looking for fouls. DiVincenzo on the illegal screen that was called. I'm not even going to call it an illegal screen. That's just the most ticky-tack call you could possibly have. DiVincenzo's flopping, which, I mean, at what point? I thought they were supposed to legislate the flopping in the league. That all the Knicks do. I mean, they're always flopping, always looking for help from the refs. So I'm sure the refs are aware of that. And I know they get influenced in the Garden, but maybe maybe the Pacers get more of a friendly whistle here in game two. So I'll take the Pacers +5. Knicks just have a hard time blowing anybody out. They played seven playoff games. They've all been pretty close. I would expect another close game here. I would think the Knicks win, but 5, 5.5, that's a lot. Shop around. I think it might be a 5.5 out there, but just completely turned off by the way that game one was officiated. Absolutely ridiculous. And again, I know Knicks fans, hey, we got a good team. We haven't been good in a while. We don't want to hear about the refs, but give me a break. That was absolutely embarrassing for the league. And you got the other game, Denver, Minnesota. It's being ref like prison ball. The guys are tackling each other, no call. And then Knicks, Pacers, they breathe on each other. You breathe on a Knick and it's a foul. It's really inconsistent between the two games, but we'll do more here with Nick Larson in a minute. Just quickly, I don't know if people saw this. The Tom Brady roast was maybe the funniest thing I've seen. Boy, in a long time between Nikki Glaser, who's great at these roasts. Belichick was unbelievable, making fun of Gronkowski, making fun of Amendola. I could not believe how hard they went, how deep they went out. I kind of knew it was coming on, and there was nothing else on that night. There was no playoff games. It was the Sunday night, so. That was the day Magic Cavs game seven was in the afternoon. There was nothing really on at night. So I just, people were telling me about it. So I turned it on. Oh my God. It is so funny. If you have a chance to watch it, I cannot recommend it enough. It crosses every line. I mean, Aaron Hernandez jokes, Giselle jokes, just about everyone was funny. Will Ferrell was not good. They tried to have him come on as Ron Burgundy. It did not work. And that's the thing about these roasts. If, it's not, your resume doesn't matter. The fact that you're trying to be funny doesn't matter. You're either funny or you're not. And Will Ferrell's Burgundy was not funny, but everybody else was really good. I think I still have like 20 minutes or so to watch, so I'm not completely through it. I think I stopped at Ben Affleck, who might have been one of the ones who wasn't good. I don't think he was particularly funny. I think that's about when I started to turn it off. But my goodness, the rest of it, making fun of Gronk, making fun of, Bledsoe was good, Moss was good. I just thought, it was funny just to see everybody there and go at each other. Plus, you have the added tension of Kraft, Belichick, Brady. There is an actual real life, when everybody actually really likes each other, there's not that tension. The fact that There's some bad blood in different directions, added to the tension, added to the humor. I can't recommend it enough. It was absolutely hilarious. The Brady roast on Netflix. But coming up next, Nick Larson. We'll talk some baseball, some awards, some NBA. That is next. This is Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. A first time guest, longtime friend from Go Boys. It is Nick Larson. Nick, what's up, man? Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Excited to join. Been a long time coming. Love the pod.
Appreciate it, man. We'll do some baseball. We'll do some basketball. I guess we'll start with baseball here. I know you and I have texted about this. We felt like the awards, just from the time we look at them in February, March, everything has shrunk a little where it's like, man, they're not giving you much that's bettable. As we stand here 5 weeks into the season, anything that jump out at you like, hey, I would recommend this bet at this current price?
I usually stay away from the MVP stuff because that's just, I mean, a toss up. Like you have your Mookie and Shohei. It's like you got so many guys on the same team fighting for stuff, stealing votes. So I like looking at Cy Young stuff. And I know you threw it out there like, what was it, 3 weeks ago or so with Shota from the Cubs. You got him at a great price. I think he's down to like plus 1500 for the NL Cy Young now. So he's been pitching unreal. The only worry I have with him is some of the stuff with the Japanese guys that come over, they kind of fade second half. So if he can keep it up, I mean, you got him at a great price. The other one I was looking at was the AL Cy Young, Cole Ragans, Kansas City. He was like plus 1600 on FanDuel last I looked. Kind of similar to what we hit last year with the Blake Snell pick. He's got the strikeout stuff. He's going to get the wins. Team should be in contention. So I really like him as a pitcher. Watched him pitch last night against the Brewers. Big-time velocity, big-time strikeout pitcher. So those are my two Cy Young plays that I'm looking at right now.
Do you agree with the idea that, hey, they've really kind of taken the fun away? They've taken their ball and gone home a little bit where you look at the numbers and there's not as much that's attractive. I felt like this with NFL MVP too. I know we talked about that before.
Yeah, I mean, the value, like I was even looking at the beginning of the year, I was really in on Freddy Peralta with the Brewers. And then I looked at the odds and I was like, man, not even worth it. Like they're not really giving you much value with the awards that they did in the past.
Do all these pitchers getting hurt, and it's died down a little bit the last week or so? I mean, anytime you go 3 or 4 days without an injury, I feel it's what was the episode of The Office where like we've gone 0 days without an injury? Like we've gone a few days without an injury, but does that stuff make you less inclined to bet Cy Young in futures? Does it make you more inclined to take a shot? What are your thoughts on like the injuries and how that plays into a betting of these awards?
Yeah, especially with the pitcher stuff. I've been looking into that a little bit here lately, and it seems like If you're a major league pitching staff and you are developing these guys throughout the systems or whatever, everyone now wants a guy throwing 96 to 100. Like you can work with that. You don't want the guys they're not looking for the guys throwing lefties throwing 86 to 88 anymore. The game's changed. They want spin rate, they want velocity, they want movement. And some of these guys, I mean, some of these guys' bodies are not designed. Like, throwing a baseball is one of the most taxing things in all of sports. It's not even so much the throwing, it's the deceleration of your arm. Like, your arm is trying to stop so quickly after throwing the ball. It's so much different than softball, where they have that natural underhand movement. Where the baseball, it's like you have so much strain on your shoulder, your elbow. So, with all the pitch shaping and spin rate and Tommy John going on, I mean, Tommy John, you used to have Tommy John once and you're set, like you're good to go. But now there's guys, multiple Tommy Johns, guys like Shane Bieber. Like, is his velocity ticked up this year before he got hurt? Are we sure he's like a 96 to 98 type guy, or was he better off staying down in the low 90s with the control he had? And he was effective like that. So I don't know. Maybe not all these guys are designed to throw 100 miles an hour. So it just really makes it tough betting on the stuff, tying up your money for long term. Like, I know a lot of people are on Spencer Strider season leader strikeouts, and it's like, well, that's toast 1 month into the year. So it does make it very tough to bet on that type of stuff.
Yeah, and look, it's boring and people don't want to tie up their money from, I don't know, March until, I mean, October. October at the earliest, if you're betting these awards, like, you don't announce these awards until basically like a week before Thanksgiving. But if you're just betting like season-long stuff, unders are just such good bets. Trout always gets hurt. You bet his unders. You know what? You just bet it and you just wait for the alert to hit for him to get hurt. Strider under K. I mean, so many of these guys, as long as they start the season, I mean, you miss a week, you miss a few weeks, 6 weeks, whatever. Or you're just, you underperform like Acuna with his home runs. I mean, just people don't want to bet it. They want the big scores. They want the big strikes, but these unders on these season long stuff is just the way to go, I think.
So much value. It's almost turned into like, I know a lot of people do this with NFL with running backs. They take every running back, bet the under, enough of them get hurt or enough stuff happens where you're profitable.
Or the quarterbacks last year. I mean, how many did you cash just based on injury? You know, right. Mac Jones gets benched, Russell Wilson gets benched. There's just injuries, benched, underperformance. I mean, even if these guys, if they get hurt, you win. If they get benched, you win. If neither of those happen, okay, you got like a 50-50 bet. And again, people don't want to do it. It's boring, but it's a lot of time what's boring and what's fun is the opposite of, you know, what people want to do. Do you buy this idea that the balls are different, that the balls are dead? What are your thoughts here on the baseballs, which seems to be a crisis every year in terms of their juice, their de-juice? What are your thoughts here on the balls?
I mean, you can go on to Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it now, and it's a different story every day. They're using juice balls today. They're using dead balls today. A lot of people like to play the home run lottos, and those were not hitting to start the year. I think Sunday there was 35 home runs. So, I mean, that's a pretty decent day for home runs if you're looking at that now. I mean, honestly, if there was a big change or something, somebody would have said something by now, like a player or something would have done something. Cause I mean, this affects them too. This affects their stats. This affects their next contract. I don't think that they're switching baseballs on certain days. I don't think they're switching baseballs on the weekend or using different balls of any sort. I mean, a lot of it could be weather, humidity, where the games are being played. I don't know. It's too early for that for me. I mean, people are saying laces are different. If you have higher laces, you're going to have pitchers with more blisters. The spin rate's going to be insane on those. So I'm not buying into the different baseballs. It's starting to heat up as far as home runs and offense. And if you do believe it, there's plenty of other markets you can take advantage of. Like I know earlier in the year, I looked at a lot of unders, a lot of no home runs in games. You can attack outs for pitchers. So there's just different routes. If you really feel that way and you think you're right, then take advantage of it in different ways. There's more markets. I know it's the sexy and popular thing is to bet the home runs, but there's plenty of other markets out there to take advantage of.
Yeah. And it could just be that, again, I haven't studied it to, know whether weather is a factor. It's not a factor. Maybe there's something to it. Maybe there's not. It's just baseball could just be not buttoned up enough where it's just, hey, they're not consistent making the balls. There's nothing nefarious where it's like, you know what, look at the uniforms and how they screwed that up. It's just, hey, maybe they're so incompetent where the way they distribute who makes the balls. Maybe some days you get one way ball, the ball's one way. Someday you get a different ball and there's no rhyme or reason to it, but it's the way, I don't know, they're being produced. Who knows?
Right. And I mean, I've seen it firsthand. Like they get those baseballs in and it's either bat boys or clubhouse managers are rubbing up the baseballs, delivering them to the umpires. You're not getting a package baseball that you're taking out of the wrapper and using. Like there's each team probably wants it done differently. Like, oh, this pitcher likes the ball rubbed up a certain way. So there is different gamesmanship that direction, but I don't think that's going to affect home runs on a daily basis.
Well, you did this. You had a job in baseball, right? Working in clubhouses. What can you explain like what that entailed and how that, you know?
I worked 10 years minor league clubhouse at the AA level. So we started with the Dodgers. So we had guys like Jock Peterson, Corey Seager. We had Clayton Kershaw came through. Then we moved to the Twins, and that was probably, we probably had one of the best teams I've ever seen in minor league baseball. We had, our lineup was Byron Buxton, Jorge Polanco, Max Kepler, and Miguel Sano were the first four hitters in the lineup. And then we had Jose Berrios pitching. So
wow,
went to the Twins for 3 years, and then we went to the Reds for my final year there. So I was just in charge of the clubhouse as far as uniforms, equipment, just overseeing all that type of stuff, transactions, people going up and down, getting stuff shipped to them, cars, you name it. basically like the team mom.
I'm sure you have stories, some of them, anything you can share. Not that's a different that's a different version of this podcast in terms of story time.
Story time. So probably, yeah, one I can share this kind of, I mean, I almost witnessed the end of Corey Seager's baseball career. Playing, it was, I mean, we were there, like, at, we had to do all the, make sure all the jerseys and stuff are good for the next day and everything's cleaned up. And he, I think he had been called up just recently to Double A, and it was me, the visiting clubhouse guy. We were hanging up uniforms from laundry, and him and the video guy were playing ping pong. We had a ping pong table in there, so they were playing ping pong. It was probably like midnight or so like that, and they hadn't left yet after the game. And it was, they were going pretty hard. And he took his shirt off because they were all sweating playing ping pong. He takes his shirt off, throws it to the side, and the video guy hits like one right off the edge, and he lunges to reach for it and steps right on that shirt. And his knee just collapsed. I'm like, oh my goodness. I'm like, he just blew out his knee playing ping pong, and I'm here standing watching it. I'm like, this is going to be the worst thing ever. But he got up and he was fine. So I was like, oh my gosh, that could have been the worst. I mean, he was the number one prospect in baseball. I was like, this is going to be disastrous.
Day to day, what's your betting diet like? I know you like to play these exact, how would you phrase it? Exact pitch for exact at bat. But just take me through like your process handicapping any given day on just how you attack the board. Where do you start?
Yeah, usually I start like the night before. I'll go through, check all the pitching matchups. I mostly do like either strikeouts. I've been getting into walks a lot lately because there's a lot of value there. They've kind of decreased the value as far as pitcher strikeouts this year. So it's a lot tougher taking the alt strikeouts is what I used to do a lot of. So I usually like kind of look the night before because see if I can snipe any good lines. Check the matchups. And then another thing is I've been playing a lot of RBI plays too. So just checking batter versus pitcher data, try to get a game plan going into the next day if some of the lines aren't out. And then like, yeah, you said the first pitch stuff, another market they've kind of tanked this year, but there's certain guys who you can target as far as swinging first pitch, whether it's Acuna, Altuve, CJ Abrams. So just kind of seeing who they're facing, if that pitcher is a strike thrower or kind of wild. So just making a list at night and then just having a game plan going into the next day of what I'm going to try to target when the lines do come out.
And what do you think is mispriced a lot of times? You said walks, you mean like under to walks if you want to play like under 2.5?
I like playing the over walks. So like a lot of guys I'm targeting is like Soroka, Tyler Anderson, Cabrera for the Marlins. Those type of guys, and then also looking at the teams they're playing, like always the two top teams for walks are the Yankees and Dodgers every year. So I mean, you got Soto, you got the top of the Dodgers lineup, you get some intentional walks mixed in there. So I like usually you have to pair those though, when you face those, so you have to take like two walks for one guy, two walks for another to get plus money. But the hit rate is pretty high on those, and they haven't really caught on to them yet as far as odds. So just riding it out right now.
Last one in baseball, anything and any teams jump out to you, teams you're surprised they've done well, teams you're looking to fade, teams you're looking to back, just general takeaways here 5 weeks in.
Man, I was looking at the standings today. I mean, I do like Kansas City. I've been watching them against the Brewers the last couple of days. I do like Kansas City. A lot of this, though, like you said earlier, when we were talking about pitcher injuries, it's so hard. Like a lot of these teams are one pitcher goes down, they're toast, or they add one pitcher and they can make a huge jump. One guy I've really liked watching so far, and I don't think he's going to stay very long on this team, but he'll probably be there for a little bit until they have to trade him, is Mason Miller of the A's, the closer for the A's. He's got 29 Ks in 14 innings. I know they started him out as a starter, but the smart move was definitely moving him to the bullpen with that velocity he has. So he's a guy I do like watching. It's just tough, though. Like the NL Central, I follow that probably the most since I'm a Brewers fan, but that division is just an absolute mess. The Brewers don't have the pitching. No one in that division really has the pitching to compete with anybody else. So, and then you have obviously like the Phillies and Braves are going to be tough. The Dodgers, I don't see anybody catching the Dodgers there. So I don't know. It's been a lot of kind of a lot of chalk so far, but it'll be interesting once we get closer to the trade deadline, if any more injuries pop up or who's going to become available.
You think there's a this year's Diamondbacks or this year's Rangers that they've made the playoffs? It's just so unpredictable because once you get in, anything can happen, which is always the case. But baseball, but now you put half the teams in, now double the stuff can happen. So it's like the Braves, the Dodgers, yeah, you can be the best team all you want. It's like, you know what, you get to October, it's you know, you get that layoff. It's just, it's a whole new season.
It's so tough because, like you said, once you get in and you have to play, you play right away. Like they knocked the Brewers out, like swept them. Once you get rolling, then it's like, man, it's tough to beat sometimes. So, and then if you have like, if you can get three solid pitchers in the playoffs, you can kind of just ride those guys throughout it.
Yep, no doubt. Have you been watching playoffs at all, NBA?
Yeah, Bucks fan, so it was very 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 tough watching the first round with no Giannis. That was miserable watching. I mean, that's 30 points and 12 rebounds every game subtracted off of that lineup.
Yeah, I felt like that was kind of sneakily the best thing that could happen to Doc because it was not going well before that. Now it's, oh, hey, we got injured. It's like, yeah, you were kind of losing to the Grizzlies and the Raptors as like 15-point favorites a lot, even when you were healthy. So now the injuries is a nice little excuse, but, you know, it wasn't going so well before that. Is Denver done?
Man, the funny thing is, like, the Spurs might have actually flipped the whole playoffs.
Yeah.
That last game, like, if Denver can win that game, they avoid the Timberwolves. Like,
might have had to play them anyway in the conference finals, but yeah, they definitely rejiggered the seeding for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that team is just so tough right now, defensively, offensively. I mean, Murray's going to have to do – they need something, someone – Porter Jr. and Murray's got to get extremely hot. I don't know. I don't know. It's going to be so tough coming from 2-0, and the games haven't even been close.
It looks like there's about 8 or 9 guys on defense at all times for the Timberwolves, which is hard. It's just like, man, they are just all over Denver. And Jokic has been good, yeah, but he's not been great.
Basketball, like, it's another level as far as physicality, too. Yeah. So there is a good defensive team going in, and then you add that extra play on stuff, and it makes it that much more difficult.
Would you take a split in the two games in Minnesota right now? If you're Denver, would you sign for a split? You go home down 3-1.
I mean, you almost have to,
which is not a good scenario. You're gonna have to win 3 in a row, but you're not in a good scenario, I guess.
No,
I look at it like, you know what? I get to be 3-1. I'll get my home game. Hopefully then it's 3-2. And then who knows if I can steal game 6, then I'm home for game 7 again. Kind of grasping at straws. I don't think they're beating that Minnesota team 4 out of 5. It's just hard to picture at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the team I think that really has it made out for them is Boston.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
Boston doesn't have to play Milwaukee or a healthy 76er team. So if they don't make it to the finals this year, I mean, I don't know what the issue would be.
LeBron had some easy pass, but LeBron kind of made those pass look easy because he was so great and he was on some good teams. But my goodness, I can't remember a path this season. Maybe the Knicks will give him a hard time and we'll see. But barring an injury, I mean, they should basically not only make the finals, they probably won't have to play against game 7. And I don't know that they're going to have to play game 6. I think that's probably even 50-50. So, yeah, I mean, there was not that long ago. It was like, hey, you don't want to lay -150 on a team to win the conference, but it's like, you know what? Value is value. This is just, man, good luck beating that team with some of these other teams. Who do you think wins it all?
If you were to ask me a couple weeks ago, I would have probably said Denver, but I mean, I don't see someone – if Minnesota's going to play like this, I don't see someone beating Minnesota right now.
I know. It's hard to believe. It's hard to wrap your head around the Minnesota Timberwolves as world champions. But again, it's hard to see someone beating them 4-7. I mean, we all thought we're looking for a Denver. We're looking at a Denver Boston final. I think you could just swap out Denver and say, you know what? My bad. It's Minnesota. It's Minnesota Boston here. And
does Boston have the size to match up with Minnesota?
Going to be tough. It's going to be tough. A lot of it too depends on how these games are officiated. Like if you allow Minnesota to just maul everybody, it's tough. But Boston will have the extra home game, but Boston certainly looks like the best team right now. I feel bad discounting OKC. I feel like everyone just kind of discounted them as the one seed all year, and they would have home court in the conference finals if that's the series. But yeah, Minnesota looks really, really difficult to beat.
They're just such a tough matchup for everybody.
Yeah. Nope,
you have to have a big, and then you have to have someone that can stop Ant. And I mean, you can't stop him. You just have to do something to slow him down.
And Towns has kind of reshaped his image too. He's lost a little weight. He's kind of fit in a little bit. And they're just, they're so long. They get guys, they get contributions as McDaniels and Walker. Gobert does his thing. It's just, man, it's a really good team. It's a really long team. All right, man. Appreciate it. Anything else? Anything you want to plug? Where can everyone find your stuff?
Yeah, just find me on X at Nick Larson GB and goalboys.com for all of my plays.
All right, man. This was fun catching up. Hopefully we'll do this again soon down the road.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, Will.
All right. That will do it. Thank you guys for listening. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe. Thank you to Nick Larson. We'll be back Friday. See you guys then.